This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, we set the final four for the men's bracket. We know who we've got. A lot of news swirling around in the world of college basketball. So that means we turn to Zach Braziller from the New York Post. Hey, Zach, how are you?
What's up, Lori? How are you?
I'm doing well. All right, so we have all four of our seeds. And on the one hand, we have... It was chalk. We have all four number one seeds. Tell me what the positives of having all four number one seeds are. And then for the tournament, are there negatives to having all four number ones left in the final four?
Yeah, I think the positive is you would think you get some really good games. You know, it's only happened once, 2008. And that was the year the great Memphis-Kansas game championship game where Memphis missed free throws, John Calipari didn't foul, Mario Chalmers hit the three at the end, and then Kansas won in overtime. So look, the positive is it should be really good games. You have four really good teams, probably the four best teams in the country, and you know, a lot of exciting matchups. The negative is storylines aren't great. You know, they're the 4-1 seeds. They're the teams that were supposed to be there. You know, this has been a tournament devoid of Cinderella. It's been a tournament with very few upsets. You know, the only double-digit seed to make the Sweet 16 was Arkansas. They're clearly not a Cinderella. To me, there aren't a lot of storylines going to Final Four. I think the Saturday games have a chance to be great. But the actual storylines, you know, unless you are all about Duke and Cooper Flag, unless Walter Clayton... does it for you, unless Kelvin Sampson trying to finally win a championship, Bruce Pearl and Johnny Brewer, you know, unless you're a fan of one of these teams, I could see it kind of being like a bit dull, at least in the days leading up to the game.
Yeah, and we'll get into breaking down the Final Four and talking about some of the, you know, the basketball aspect of it, but the big picture from a story standpoint, I wonder if, you know, do you think this is a one-year aberration, all four, you know, number one seeds, as you said, it happened in 2008, and whether it's 4-1 seeds, but kind of more of the chalk of the tournament holding, whether it's, you know, one seeds and two seeds and not as many upsets and not the Cinderellas, the lack of those sort of storylines. Do you think that's a one-year aberration, or is there something fundamentally to the transfer portal and NIL that, and where we're heading with revenue sharing and all of these things, that we will have just fewer Cinderellas and upsets?
I think there's no question it's concerning. And, you know, you see it every year where the top players from low and mid majors are transferring up and going to bigger schools because they can pay them. I do think it's a little bit early to kind of say this is a trend because it's only 1 year. You can look at last year's Final Four as a perfect example. I know UConn won, but you had plenty of upsets last year. You had plenty of unpredictability last year. So I I do think it has to be some kind of a concern, because we all see how the transfer portal works, and revenue sharing is only going to create a bigger divide. But I think you need to wait more than 1 year before saying, well, the day of Cinderella is over, that we're not going to see upsets anymore in the tournament. It's just 1 year. But I do think there are some aspects that definitely are cause for concern for the sport.
If you had the ability, as you say, these are at least causes for concern. I've felt, and I'm sure, look, you are somebody who, you cover college sports, football, basketball. I know how much you love college basketball. I've felt, as much as, football is my favorite sport, I love baseball, I'm an NBA fan and love, pro basketball, all of that. With that said, the NCAA tournament, to me, has always been the best postseason tournament, kind of best postseason that we have. Like, there's a magic to it that has, there's something fantastic about it. And so if you had the ability with some of these fundamental things that are concerning and looking ahead seem like they would be, if you had the ability, is there a rule change or something that you would put in place as a safeguard to try and not get us as far towards, the place where it feels like we may be heading?
Yeah, I mean, the genie is out of the bottle to an extent here with name, image, and rights. You can't just go and say, well, you can't pay kids anymore. That's obviously never going to happen.
That's not going to happen. Yes. We're going to assume you have to compensate players on some level. Yes.
I think one thing that has to happen is, and it's not easy. You're going to have to collectively bargain and all kinds of stuff. And there's no union. And with revenue sharing, you have to go to multi-year contracts. It cannot be a free-for-all every year. And that's right now what it is. It's not healthy for kids to be in four schools in 4 years.
Every year is free agency in college basketball.
Yeah. And the worst part is it's free agency during it's like NBA free agency during the NBA playoffs, which is just ridiculous.
Right, yeah. For people who aren't aware of this, explain what goes on in terms of the timing of the transfer portal.
Right. So last year, the portal actually opened the day after Selection Sunday, which was incredibly dumb. This year, they pushed it back a week to where it opened the day after the second round. It's still ridiculous. So you have, right now, you have coaches recruiting and preparing for a Final Four in the same week. Mm-hmm. It's just, St. John's season ended last Saturday, and they landed a transfer on Tuesday night, like 3 days later. I mean, it's just really unhealthy. To me, they got to find a way to push it back, back to the day after the Final Four. You have people more interested in the portal than they are in the NCAA tournament. It's just not good for the game. But back to kind of my point is they have to get the contracts. So if a mid-major program develops a really good player for a year, they actually could get them. It has to be to me, I wrote this in the post a month ago, that they have to get a multi-year contract, 2 year contracts, where the only way the player get out of the contract if the coach leaves or the coach is fired or whatever, it binds the player and the team. So where if it's not working, you can't just run and leave. The coach can't kick you out. It's not healthy. It's not.
All right. We're talking to Zach Braziller from The Post about March Madness, about college basketball. So here we are then. So on the positive side, we've got, a couple months ago, you probably would have said to me, I think we'll end up with three teams from the SEC and Duke in the Final Four. And so it has been predictable in that way. But now that we have it, let's break down these matchups. We have Auburn versus Florida. We have Duke versus Houston. Let's start Auburn versus Florida. What needs to happen if Auburn's going to win? Give me one thing for fans, people who are going to watch that game and be dialed in. For Auburn to win, what needs to happen? For Florida to win, what needs to happen?
For Auburn, it's Broome's health. You know, he hurt his right elbow. He's a lefty, but he hurt his right elbow in the second half. It looked like a really bad injury.
I thought, by the way, he mouthed the words, "I'm done," went into the locker room, and I thought that was it. I thought something was broken, and he's out for the season.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was shocked that he came back in, but he did. Came back in and was fine. He's obviously a big question mark is his health and what he can do. You know,
why is his size and health? I mean, obviously he's, a dominant player, but as a big man in particular in the matchup versus Florida, it would seem like that would be really, really hard without him.
Yeah. I mean, Florida's got a lot of guys they can throw at you. There's no doubt about that. Florida has a lot of different options. They obviously have Walter Clayton Jr., who's an incredible closer. You know, it's going to be a really hard game, for Auburn to win if Broome isn't Broome. I was impressed today. I thought Michigan State would win. I like Michigan State to win that game. I was impressed by Auburn. I thought their defense was terrific. I think if you're Florida, you just want it to be close last 5 minutes and try to just ride Walter Clayton, because he's now done it twice where he's carried them to win late in these games.
I saw, before March Madness, before the tournament, I saw a lot, some mock drafts, mock NBA drafts that had Walter Clayton Jr. out of Florida, had him going in the second round. And I've now seen it where maybe he's getting picked, 30th or something in the first round. What am I missing when I watch him play? I just don't see 30 better players than Walter Clayton Jr. And, I don't know. Is there an NBA comp? As you look at this player, I just don't understand how he could be not perceived as projectable to the pro level.
Yeah, I agree. He tested the waters last year. He wasn't going to be a first. He was going to be like a two-way guy, mid-second round pick. So he came back. I like him a lot. And he's a guy, he's kind of a late bloomer. You know, he was more of a football player in high school. And Rick Pitino found him and developed him into a hell of a player at Iona. And he's become even better at Florida. I'm with you.
I'll give you my comp, people may think I'm nuts on this, but Jamal Murray. I think there's something to the body type a little bit, and also Jamal Murray, for all that people may want to complain about him, whatever, when the game is on the line or it's the playoffs and the postseason and they need him to be that guy and make a shot at the end of games, a strong guy, strong guard, I don't know. I just feel like he has a little Jamal Murray-ish in him, and some team's going to be super happy. You put him with a superstar in the NBA, and with that ability to be the closer and take over a game at the end, nerves of steel. There are going to be teams, I think, that are going to be unhappy that they passed on him.
I'll tell you, someone smart will draft him. Maybe the last pick or two in the first round.
Yep.
First pick or two in the second round, and years from now, people are going to say, "What? How did that happen?" I have a perfect example of a, he's not the same player, but kind of a similar guy who's a really good college player, Miles McBride. I thought Miles McBride should have been a first round. I loved him in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I thought he should have been a first round pick. I thought he should have went in the mid 20s. He ended up going what, like 37, 38 to the Knicks, and now looking, he's a very good first guard off the bench. He's a guy that defended. He's a guy that made shots. He was tough. And look, Clayton's a better college player than McBride was. And that's not taking anything away from McBride, but sometimes we kind of, sometimes they look too much at projectables and not at, you know what, he played in the, sorry, if you're, if you can be a first team all league player in the SEC, you got a shot to play in the NBA. As with as good as the SEC was this year, I'm with you. I think Walter Clayton's an NBA player. I'm a little biased. I admit I'm a fan of the person. You know, I covered him in Iona a little bit, covered him during his recruitment when St. John, we thought St. John's was going to get him. He's a great, great person. So I'm a little biased, but I mean, guys had a tremendous tournament and I would not bet against him getting Florida in the final.
All right, so that's on one side. On one side, we've got the size and the depth of Florida and the closer in Walter Clayton. Keep it close and hand the ball to him. On the other hand, you've got Auburn and their defense and, yeah, the health of Broome, and we'll see what happens there. On the other side, we have Duke and Houston. And, you know, Duke and the dominance of Houston – I mean, the dominance of Duke. How does Houston, I know they're a good defensive team, how can Houston potentially win against what feels like a juggernaut in Duke?
Like, Houston's really good. Like, let's be clear here. Houston's really good. I think they have a shot. I don't think they'll win the game, but I would be very surprised if this is a 15-20 point game. They're gonna try to make Duke uncomfortable. They're gonna just go nuts on the glass. They're gonna play with their hair on fire. It's what they do. They're gonna have, you would think, have a home court edge, you know, being in San Antonio. Duke's gonna get two tough games to win this tournament. That's the one thing I will say about this Final Four. While the stories aren't great, that's what I'm looking forward to. Because Duke, you know, if you go by like how KenPom rates these teams, Duke is the set since 96-97, just based on like how they rank them with the net rating. Duke is the this is the best team since 98-99. Duke, they're better than UConn was by 2 full points.
Wow.
UConn last year, and they're a juggernaut. I don't think there's any doubt. They have NBA players. They have really good role players. They just fit so well. But Houston, if there's one team in the country that could kind of make them uncomfortable and kind of get them off their game, it's Houston, because Houston's going to play incredibly physical. They're going to be tough. They're not going to be scared. They can make threes. They really rebound. They obviously really defend. I'm really looking forward to that game. I think it's going to be fascinating.
Duke, obviously coached by a guy in John Shire, who their head coach, 37 years old, and replaced a legend in Mike Krzyzewski. And oftentimes, the guy who replaces the guy struggles. It's hard to replace a legend. What has John Shire done so well, or what's impressed you the most about, you know, here he is at age 37 in his third year and he has his team in the Final Four, as you say, a juggernaut. What has impressed you most about Shire replacing Krzyzewski?
Just that it doesn't seem too big for him. You know, with Kyle Nepton, it just seemed the job was a little too big for him. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is an incredibly tough position stepping in for Jay Wright. And, you know, what's so impressive about this Duke team is usually a team of freshmen will struggle defensively, will have maybe some maturity issues. This team doesn't have any of that. You know, they're so good on defense. They're a team that, the bright lights don't faze them, but also overconfidence isn't something that they've had to deal with either. You know, that hasn't, you know, negatively impacted them either. He's clearly really knows what he's doing. And for such a young guy, he has a way of commanding the team. You know, I'm usually against the whole keep it in house thing, because if you're like, you're hurting yourself, you know, you're limiting your options, and it hasn't worked more than it's worked. But clearly here it's worked. I mean, he's terrific. I don't see how anyone could say otherwise. They're an absolute juggernaut. And he's been his first 2 years were a little different. You know, they weren't, you know, necessarily a huge favorite. This tournament, they came in as one of the big favorites, and there's a lot of pressure that goes along with that, and he's handled that so well.
Yeah. Before I let you go, a couple other questions that, not the tournament, but about college basketball. You mentioned Kyle Neptune and Villanova firing. Neptune replaced Jay Wright, and they're hiring former Seton Hall coach Kevin Willard. How did you feel about the whole way this went down with Kevin Willard and his comments during the tournament while he was coaching Maryland and all the rumors flying around?
Yeah, it was a very strange situation. I was very surprised that he would leave. It's still kind of weird to think of Kevin Willard coaching Villanova after all the battles he had with Jay Wright when he was at Villanova and Willard was at Seton Hall. I don't think there's any question it could have been handled much better. It took attention away from Maryland's great season and getting to their first Sweet 16 in a long time. So, instead of, calling his, sites TMZ and all that stuff, I think he could have done better job just kind of refusing to address it.
Yep.
And I like Willard a lot. We go back a ways, but I think it became too much of about him and what was going to happen with the job and not enough about that team, which had a great year. So that, I guess, that would be my one, thing. But look, it's great for the Big East. You get Richard Pitino in here. You get Willard in here. Yes, you need Sean Miller. But, having a legitimate coach at Villanova, they're going to be good next year. I don't think he's going to get players. I wouldn't bet against them making a tournament. It's good for the league. It turned out a net positive while Sean Miller leaving. And I'm not necessarily a fan of Sean Miller with some of the stuff we've heard in the past and, him kind of letting his top assistant, Book Richardson, take the fall for him and all that. It's a net positive for the league to get Richard Pitino in here, to get Kevin Willard in here, and now with revenue sharing, I think the Big East, it's going to only help the league because they don't have football to deal with. So I think in the long run, this was a positive march for the Big East, even though they didn't have anyone make the Sweet 16 and it wasn't a great year on the court. We all know how important coaches are, and they had two pretty good ones here.
All right. Good stuff out of Zach Braziller from the New York Post. Zach, always appreciate the time, and we'll catch up with you soon.
All right. Have a good one.
All righty.